Welcome back to the Modcast.
This year, we're exploring decision-making, sustainability, and how we manage natural resources.
This series is an extension of the Yukalara Commons, an online game which dives into what drives our choices and decision-making.
Each episode, we're joined by local legends and specialists in their field. In the last episode, we explored what happens when we don't have all the evidence when we make decisions, and the unfortunate impacts this can have. Humans have an incredible ability to interact with our environment, but it's not just our environment. We share it with all living organisms, and they feel the impact of our choices. So what is our current predicament, and why is it more important than ever to think about how we make decisions and share resources? Our first guest for this episode is Dr. Robert Crocker, a senior lecturer at the University of South Australia. Dr. Crocker has published for decades on social and environmental problems associated with consumption and waste.
My background was history of ideas. So, really in archival research in libraries, you're looking for evidence to support an interpretation of what you're looking at. And I was particularly interested in the early modern history of science at that time. And that led me, when I came here, I was teaching architectural history, design history. And then in about 2010, I started getting really interested in the environment. So I was also involved in philosophy, sort of history of science and technology. And that really led me into looking at the environment, because a lot of the problems we've created are somebody else's solutions.
Yeah.
And they're extremely complicated. You know, for example, the latest estimates are that around 70% of emissions come from household consumption. When you look at a problem like waste, you're looking at the problem of consumption, really. I mean, you can look at very specific end of pipe problems, you know, like too much plastic, too much e-waste, etc. But you're really looking at the consumption side and what people are doing to sell things to people in their homes and their businesses, etc. I'm particularly interested in efficiency and the way that chasing down economic efficiency often causes other problems. So we end up with cheaper things, so more people buy them, and then they become faster. You know, the turnover becomes faster and there's more waste. So waste is actually only part of the problem, you know, and it occurs all the way along the supply chains. It's not just in the house, but the house, in a way, is the train driving a whole series of decisions through business, through government, et cetera. I think what happens with waste management is people start very enthusiastically thinking that the problem is at the end of the pipe. And then, you know, they get into it and they start to realize it's actually separation or, you know, recycling, or, you know, and they go back and they start to realize it actually starts in the home and then in the shops. So they chase the material flow backwards, if you like. And in a sense, they come to the conclusion that I did some time ago, that it's a, you know, it is a consumption problem, and it's a wicked problem in that we can't put everyone out of work, we can't crash the economy and expect everyone to say, great, we can now fix the environment. You know, it's one of these wicked problems in that there's no obvious single solution. It often requires co-creation, collaborative research, collaborative design to find pathways, not necessarily solutions, but pathways that work.
Let's cast your mind back to one of the main themes in the previous episode in the Modcast series, that it's better to gather evidence early on in the problem because prevention is better than cure. But as Dr. Crocker continued, it felt more and more like we'd gathered an enormous amount of evidence and knowledge on how unsustainable waste and consumption are. Every decision made is an opportunity to collect more evidence on the impact it has. And so another way of looking at the issue of consumption is that the same decisions are being made over and over again, despite the evidence on its harm, hence why the issue persists and is only getting worse. While our current predicament is pretty grim, our Brain Trust also had a pretty clear message on what we can do to address it, and it comes back to thinking about what you're making the decision for. Next, we spoke to Professor Jeff Connor, a specialist in quantitative, economic, environmental, and social integrated system modelling. We asked him what a sustainable decision looks like.
My title is a professor of water economics at UniSA. And more broadly, I would describe my work as being environmental and resource economics or ecological economics. Those are two labels related to the work that I do. And so the important things that we're talking about are taking a public perspective for policy around decisions that are allocating, deciding how to use water, land, air that we emit gases into. So we're talking about sustainability, right? Well, we live in a place where we've got intersecting interpretations of what sustainability is. And if we're thinking in an ecological sense, we might be thinking in a Haudenosaunee sense. Yeah, that's an American Indian. They were known as Iroquois in a more colonial language. And, you know, they had this seventh generation thinking. The idea was that when you sit down and deliberate what you should do, you don't think about just yourself and your family. You think seven generations from now, how happy will those people be, you know? And in a sense, if you go to Aboriginal Australian value framing, you might see a similar sensibility. There's a important dependence between us and nature and that we have to take care of it so that it'd be in good shape for future generations, but also that there's inherently, there's value in, and we get spiritual value from regarding nature, from our interaction with it. Now, if you think of economics, they think about the benefits and the costs and the sustainability, but in a traditional framing, it's often just about the sustainability of the business itself. So that's a very, very different framing of sustainability. So some of us would be deep green ecologists, and some of us would have a Indigenous perspective, and some of us would have the perspective of our business. In my discipline, it really, I have to grapple with the intersecting plurality of views and also with intersecting paradigms of power and how people frame value differently. And so a lot of it is about trying to bring that to the surface, bring that to the conscience, think about different framings.
The current state of affairs in the 21st century would suggest that this future thinking hasn't been at the forefront of decision-making. Instead, more of a priority has been allocated into short-term games with little consideration for the long-term effects.
What I'm trying to focus on is maybe you didn't consider that these environmental things should be counted for as costs. And there is some progress in that, you know, in the sense that nowadays, for example, if a farmer decides to grow trees rather than cows in a fragile landscape, they can actually get a payment for carbon credits. You know, so in some sense, we have social rules that are emerging that facilitate that kind of decision-making, and in some ways, not so much, yeah. I think that there can be places where that can work that way, you know, if we incentivize it and, you know, so you can introduce rules that change things towards sustainability, you can introduce incentives that change things towards sustainability, and you can introduce education that change things towards sustainability. Yeah.
As you'll hear, even after we make the decision to embrace a new idea, like a circular economy, we still have a lot of decisions to make about how to manifest this new direction, as Dr. Crocker explains.
I'm now officially working in circular economy. Repair is a very important kind of priority within the circular economy. So before I was working kind of in zero waste, but which is virtually the same thing, but it's a different name. And the reason why some people love the circular economy is they think they get it when they improve their recycling. They think it's about, you know, putting things in some sort of circle, you know, like taking a lot of plastic bottles and making more plastic bottles. I see it a bit differently. I see it much more in terms of material flows and reducing material flows. And that means looking at both ends of the pipe, the front and the back. So my interpretation would be more about strategies to retain the value in products and materials for longer.
As we heard, there are ways that we're shifting from short-term gains to long-term planning. Whether it's incentivizing sustainable choices or repairing our materials instead of throwing them away like they have no more value. Can you imagine how different the world would be if we had sustainability, environmental and human health as the foundation of our decision-making around allocation of land, water or air? Perhaps the biggest predicament is attempting to implement changes like these on a global scale, Many industries rely on the global economy to function, and therefore there is a vast net of industries and people who are intricately dependent on each other. This makes applying systematic change no simple feat. So far, we've spoken about values, evidence, and decisions. Join us next time as we delve into the world of impacts. This is episode 3 of 4 of Modcast Season 6, The Commons. Thank you to Dr. Robert Crocker and Professor Jeff Connor for sharing their expertise for this episode on decisions. Thank you also to Lisa Bailey for their additional support for these podcasts. The music was composed by Tristan Luth Robbins. This episode was produced by Jess Smith and senior produced by Elizabeth Williamson of The Green Room from Radio Adelaide. If you want to explore your decision-making, head over to mod.org.au to play the UCLARA Commons game today. That's mod.org.au.